I'm Montse Alvarado, tonight on EWTN News Nightly. As a possible trade war with China looms, the president meets with a key ally in Asia. We're at the White House with a full report. A frantic search underway after an American plane disappears, where rescuers are searching and what we know about the flight. And after Mr. Trump floats the idea of negotiations with Iran, the country's supreme leader shoots it down. Why he says the idea is unwise and dishonorable. And guardian angels of the Holy Father will take you behind the scenes to show you how these men keep the Pope safe. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Montse Alvarado in for Tracy Sable. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump hosts another world leader at the White House, this time putting the United States' relationship with Japan in the spotlight. The two sides earlier agreed to bring their alliance to new heights, and today they try to fulfill that pledge. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, good to see you.
Montse, good to see you. Well, Japanese Prime Minister Ishiba Shigeru arrived here yesterday to get ready for his visit with President Trump today. Now, Japan says the Prime Minister wants to build a relationship of cooperation and trust with the new Trump administration.
President Donald Trump greets the new Prime Minister of Japan at the entrance to the West Wing.
Mr. President, what's your message to Japan?
Trump then welcomed him to the Oval Office to begin their meetings.
It's a great honor to be with Prime Minister Ishiba of Japan. He's a highly respected man, doing a fantastic job. The people of Japan like him a lot. That's good.
President Trump and the Japanese Prime Minister also appeared together in the East Room for a joint press conference. The two leaders face a range of issues, including how to deter China and North Korea and maintain peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
We also held candid discussions on challenges the Indo-Pacific region is facing. We confirmed that we are resolved not to allow unilateral attempts to change the status quo by force or coercion.
On the economy, Japan currently has a trade surplus with the United States. It also wants to cooperate on artificial intelligence and settle differences over steel.
The United States and Japan trade over $300 billion in goods and services each year. Japan has invested nearly $800 billion, and that's going to go up very, very substantially in the coming months.
And Japan was not the only topic raised at today's press conference.
And we're going to bring back the reputation of the FBI, which has been hurt very badly. It's been devastated over the last 4 years. I got to know a lot about that world, and we had some corrupt agents, and those people are gone, or they will be gone, and it'll be done quickly and very surgically.
Now, President Trump will host another world leader next week, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi. But before all that, President Trump heads to New Orleans this weekend to attend the Super Bowl. Monse.
Thank you so much, Owen. Well, joining us now is Yuki Tatsumi, director of the Japan program at the Stimson Center. Yuki, thank you for joining us. What did you make
of
the president's meeting with the Japanese prime minister?
Well, I think it was a very good first meeting. I think all of us are, because this is a very first meeting in person, I think a lot of us are expecting not too much substantive comes out. It will be, you know, we expect it to be more of an exchange of pleasantry and nothing more than that. No, it really defied our expectation in some of the very good way. I think this was a very good first meeting for Mr. Ishiba with President Trump.
What can you tell us about the prime minister's leadership style? We know that he's only been in office for a few months at this point. What do you think are the expectations, especially from a minority government?
I think moving forward with a minority government for the next several months, it'll definitely be a little bit of a difficult going for Mr. Ishiba. His leadership style is very different from Mr. Trump's very good friend, late former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Mr. Abe was more of a visionary, and he talked about big vision first and then delegate the details to his staff. Mr. Ishiba is kind of a other way around leader. So he's very meticulous in terms of framing his logic toward his policy approaches, very logical thinking, and a very detail-oriented. So very, very opposite of Mr. Abe. But nonetheless, he does care about the defense. He cares deeply about U.S.-Japan alliance, and he's a strong advocate for strong Japan's defense capability.
Well, you mentioned that there weren't a lot of details discussed, but President Trump says that Japanese Nippon Steel is dropping its purchase to buy U.S. steel and instead will make an investment in the company. This comes after former President Biden blocked the sale before he left office. What do you make of this latest development?
So this is really interesting development, and this is, I think, one of the most unexpected aspect of the summit that none of us really expected 2 years ago into this much detail, let alone reaching an agreement of some sort. But to tell the truth, what the president explained at this press conference was really much, much closer to the reality of the Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel business transactions. It was not so much of a merger. It was more about Nippon Steel investing heavily in the U.S. Steel to basically rebuild the company and bring more jobs to the United States. So I think Mr. Trump just looks at the deal as it really is, as opposed to, you know, what is often colored by labor unions' argument about how this is going to steal a job. It is quite opposite. And that is why, after President Biden opposed it, his own Democratic governor, Governor Shapiro, said he continues to hope for this deals to come through. So I think this is a really good news for the steel industry for the United States.
Well, we'll be watching that closely. Quickly, I know that the two leaders spoke on the nuclear capabilities of North Korea. Mm-hmm. You talked about the importance of defense to the new prime minister. How do you see the two countries tackling this issue under the new Trump administration?
I think the two countries, first and foremost, will really work together much more closely than ever before about basically strengthening their deterrence capability as an alliance, as a package. Japan is doing its own share in terms of shoring up its own defense capability, but there are some complementarity between the two two militaries. So I think that is really the focus that two leaders will be focusing on. Japan focused more on the shoring up its own conventional deterrence capability while continue to rely upon strengthened and credible U.S. Nuclear deterrence.
Well, it's certainly something to watch closely. Thank you so much, Yuki Tatsumi, for joining us with your time.
Thank you for having me.
Republican legislative plans are clearer now. Senate Republicans are moving ahead with their own strategy for passing President Donald Trump's top priorities before the House. The Budget Committee Chair Lindsey Graham released the text of his budget resolution, putting the first steps in motion by the GOP-led Congress to address government spending. He made his intentions known in a statement on his budget plan. This budget resolution jumpstarts a process that will give President Trump's team the money they need to secure the border and deport criminals and make America strong and more energy independent. Senator Graham said his panel will meet Wednesday and Thursday to debate and vote on the resolution, which paves the way for a border, defense, and energy bill. Meanwhile, House Speaker Mike Johnson says the GOP plan will be announced in a few days.
There won't be any details announced. At least until the end of the weekend, but probably closer to Monday. We have just a few final details to iron out, and it's going very well. I'm very excited about where we are and the fact that we're going to be moving this forward.
The speaker added that the House Republican plan will probably include raising the debt limit, a priority long sought by President Trump. Earlier this week, President Donald Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and floated a proposal for the U.S. to take control of Gaza. Today on Capitol Hill, Netanyahu and House Speaker Mike Johnson sat down for talks. In remarks later, the prime minister spoke about a future for peace, but did not mention the president's plans for Gaza.
The substantive things that we discussed, making sure that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon, and also making sure that Hamas is destroyed. We're not going to have a future for Gaza or for future for peace in our part of the world if Hamas remains there. We agreed on many things, but I think it sets the tone for this great strengthening of the American-Israeli alliance.
This is what decisive leadership looks like. And with President Trump back in the White House and Republican control of Congress, America will not turn its back on our national security priorities. Our support for Israel remains ironclad.
Democrats in Congress have placed a hold on a $1 billion arms sale package for Israel that was meant to coincide with the prime minister's visit. Neither the president nor Congress has said how it will respond. Amid Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit, President Trump signs an executive order imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court. This comes as the ICC investigates possible war crimes by Israel in Gaza. The White House says the ICC set a dangerous precedent with its arrest warrant against Netanyahu, adding the organization is engaging in illegitimate and baseless actions targeting the U.S. The sanctions include blocking ICC officials from entering the United States. The ICC responds, saying it condemns the move and plans to continue its work. Iran's supreme leader says negotiations with America, quote, are not intelligent, wise, or honorable.
If the Americans threaten us, we will threaten them. If they carry out their threats, we will carry out ours.
This comes after President Trump floated the idea of negotiating with Iran while also applying maximum pressure on the country. The supreme leader noted how Trump did not uphold the 2015 nuclear deal and says it is an experience they must learn from. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a missing flight. An American plane has vanished in Alaska, where it disappeared, and how many were on board. And the president's immigration crackdown has brought a lot of changes. But what is legal and what isn't? We speak to an immigration attorney. New jobs numbers released today show solid but unspectacular growth and a drop in the jobless rate. Employers added 143,000 jobs last month, and the jobless rate fell to 4%. Average hourly wages also rose more than 4% from last year at this time. One expert says employers are not really hiring significantly, nor are many people being laid off. A frantic search is underway in Alaska for a missing single-engine plane carrying 10 people. The U.S. Coast Guard and Air Force have stepped in to help. This video shows the airport on Thursday, just before the plane took off amid snow, freezing rain, and visibility problems. The plane was traveling just south of the Arctic Circle. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem is expected to visit the Guantanamo Bay today. So far, two deportation flights have landed at the naval station. Cells that once held Al-Qaeda suspects are now being used to jail illegal aliens that are deemed high risk. The American Civil Liberties Union is demanding that attorneys be granted access to the men, saying the administration has provided virtually no information about them, and the detentions raise questions about violations of U.S. and international law. The Trump administration is taking aim at sanctuary cities in the U.S. In addition to the 60-day pause in funding for jurisdictions that interfere with immigration enforcement, the Justice Department is setting its sights on the state of Illinois. By suing its governor, the Chicago mayor, and the Cook County Board president for allegedly obstructing deportation efforts. Maryland, Washington State, and now Massachusetts, those three states heard arguments this week against President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship. The action denies U.S. citizenship to children of undocumented immigrants or lawful immigrants who are in the country temporarily. Today, the challenge happened in a Boston court. The attorney general explained her argument before the hearing.
But newborn babies are not criminals. This order targets innocent newborns that have done absolutely nothing wrong. They do not deserve to be punished solely because of their parents' immigration status. The president cannot change the Constitution with a Sharpie or a sham executive order.
For more on this subject, I'm joined by Naresh Gahi, an immigration attorney in New York City. Thank you for being with us, Naresh. For those who may not be clear on this subject, what is birthright citizenship, and how many children and families are able to use this guarantee every year?
Birthright citizenship, in essence, means if you're born in the United States, you are conferred your right at birth. There's only one exception to that rule. It's if you're born to a diplomat or an ambassador. But other than that, a person who's born on the soil of the United States, it's considered to be a U.S. citizen, This has been in place and in effect with us for more than 150 years. And also it is written in the Constitution very carefully, and it's crafted under the 14th Amendment, wherein you are granted equality before law and equal protection of law. That's the 14th Amendment that allows you to be a U.S. citizen at birth, even if your parents are documented or even if your parents are undocumented.
Now, it seems the birthright executive order is tangled up in the courts. What is being argued by the Trump administration? And in your view, is the executive order constitutional?
It's absolutely not constitutional at all. And even if you look at the rulings of the judges, they have clearly said it that this matter should not even be brought before the courts. And the administration's lawyers should look at judicial precedent. They need to look at how the law has been in place. And if they want to have any kind of change in the law, they should be going by means of a constitutional amendment. And the likelihood of that to happen is very, very slim, especially because we would need a two-third majority, and I don't think so it's going to be possible for anyone to get that kind of majority to get it overturned.
Now, if this executive order is overturned by the courts, would that extend protection to children in the womb?
So at this stage, the way things are going from all the three courts, I think it's a sigh of relief for children that are being born right now. So at this time, it's not a problem at all. But let's see of how the future stands for them at this stage. But the way even judges have said it, it's very, very rare that the Supreme Court would even overturn this case.
I think children
that are being born, I think they should be okay, in my opinion. There's nothing much to worry about it, because the writing is on the wall in this case. It would be very rare for a judge. I mean, also you're looking at a Supreme Court wherein judges, you know, are bound by the laws. And we need to go back to the 150-year-old precedent. You're not going to be allowed to throw that precedent and go with the executive order. The chances are not even 1%, according to me.
But you mentioned the 14th Amendment. Is it possible that the courts could use this as an opportunity to extend protections to life in the womb?
At this stage, I believe they're only going to go for the lookout for the welfare of the citizen children who are being born over here. But if they need anything else, like if the Trump administration needs anything, the straight answer is going to be, please take it to the Congress of the United States. Let's decide it whether we've had enough of this. That's the mood that I'm seeing from all the three courts so far.
Well, thank you so much, Naresh Gahee. It's great to be with you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, salute from the Vatican. How the Vatican is honoring those who protect pilgrims and the Holy Father. Is Super Bowl 59, pitting the Philadelphia Eagles against the two-time defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. And the millions of people watching it from around the world will include a couple of church leaders here in the U.S. Our sister program, EWTN News In Depth, continued its tradition of reaching out to bishops in the Super Bowl cities for a prediction and a preview. This year, amid the back and forth, Bishop James Johnson of the Diocese of Kansas City St. Joseph's says he is pleased to see so many pro football players speaking openly about their faith.
I'm really encouraged by the faith of so many of the players, and not just on the field, but even afterwards in interviews, how many of them speak about their faith. And so I think it's a great witness of, you know, not covering your lampstand, but putting it out to where it can give light.
Bishop Johnson appears tonight with Archbishop Nelson Perez of Philadelphia. They discuss Sunday's game and make a friendly wager on the outcome. For more, tune in to EWTN News In Depth tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Finally tonight, this is also a busy weekend in Rome, where the Vatican is set to honor the armed forces, including those charged with the safety of pilgrims and the Holy Father. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Wolinska-Ridi has more.
The Jubilee of the Armed Forces is about to begin, a day of celebration for police and military. But for the Vatican Gendarmerie, duty never stops. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, The special militarized police force protects the Vatican and its most important occupant, the Holy Father. They are known as the Pope's guardian angels, watching over him day and night. At the Vatican Gardens, we meet the Vice Commander, Davide Giulietti. Over the last three decades, the Gendarmerie veteran has faithfully served the last three popes.
Certainly, it is a privilege reserved for a few. Protecting the Pope while we are here in the Vatican is not so difficult. But when we go abroad, in Italy, it becomes a bit more complicated.
Together with the colorful Pontifical Swiss Guard, the Gendarmerie safeguards the Holy Father. They have accompanied him on his 47 international trips in which he visited 66 different nations. Their job can be very challenging. Pope Francis is known for frequently breaking security protocols.
The Pope is very informal, so we often go off schedule. However, let's say they are good adventures that then stay in your heart.
One of the main daily tasks of the Gendarmerie is that of controlling the identity of the persons and the numbers of the cars who are trying to enter the Vatican City. Actually, the only free access inside has just a handful of the residents of the smallest country in the world. The Gendarmerie has many other roles, acting as tax, judicial and roadside police. They are responsible for keeping public order and keeping people safe. Our EWTN cameraman Fabio Gonnella had the rare privilege of patrolling with a Gendarmerie inspector navigating the hidden backstreet of the Vatican and the courtyards of the Apostolic Palace. Every inch of Vatican grounds is under constant surveillance. Highly trained officers operate in a discreet, high-security control center hidden in the basement of one of the Vatican's extraterritorial palaces. EWTN was granted exclusive access inside to film and speak with its head, Giovanni Sanseverino. This room is the nerve center of Vatican security.
This operations room is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It has become the point of reference for all activities in the Vatican, both ordinary and extraordinary.
Vice Commander Giulietti says the Gendarmerie is always seeking new recruits, young, well-prepared, but above all, deeply committed in the Catholic faith. At the heart of their headquarters lies a sacred space where officers can retreat at any moment for prayer and reflection.
The origins of the Chapel of the Pilgrim date back centuries, with the earliest mention recorded in 795. Over time, it became a church for pilgrims traveling along routes like the Via Francigena, where they would stop to pray before reaching St. Peter's.
In this sacred space, they find not just a moment of prayer, but the strength and purpose to stand faithfully beside the vicar of Christ, serving and protecting him every day. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskariedi, EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.